Museum of the Moving Image welcomes you to the Pinewood Dialogues Online, an archive of conversations with innovative creative figures in film, television, and digital media. Visit Museum of the Moving Image in New York City or online at www.movingimage.us.
Please welcome, to introduce Wong Kar-wai, great filmmaker in his own right, Ang Lee.
Thank you. I'll save that for Wong Kar-wai. It's my great pleasure to be here tonight to introduce to you a brilliant filmmaker. Now, I don't know any contemporary filmmaker or tour that draws more interest, argument, articles, even essays, admiration, and as you say, imitations. So over the years, as a fellow filmmaker, I don't know whether I turn my admiration to him into jealousy or turn jealousy into admiration. I don't know which one. I mean, I want to do those cool things. How come I don't get to do those cool things? Like going out shooting with big movie stars without a script. Like, I don't feel like shooting today. Let's just go on. Let me think of some of the legendary. If you can feel like shooting for weeks, months, years, and then throw it away and start over again. Like putting some of the most astonishing images and metaphors and beautiful romantic acting scenes together, and when it doesn't make sense, I just throw in some dreamy dialogue, like dreamy monologue and beautiful music, and it'll be brilliant. Or if the actors are leaving the set and doesn't come back, and I don't know how finish the film and just hire another actor and another ending just to wrap it up and winning all the awards. I wish I could do that. I wish I could wear those sunglasses at night. My producers, even my editor, wouldn't let me to do it. They're like, yeah, it's your film, whatever you want. You know, just forget it. I said, why don't you have me do it? Well, to introduce him, I have to tell you my admiration for him, my first experience watching his film. I just made my first movie, Pushing Hands, a little film I made in New York. I got 9 nominations from Golden Horse, so I'm flying back, attending Golden Horse Award. But everybody's talking about Days of Wildness. Look like we're going into a new era. This is the filmmaker, this is the author, this is the beginning of a new era. So I must see this movie. I rented it's a VHS, and I had such a jet lag, and I was watching, half the time I was asleep watching it, and I was listening to those music, watching those shots, and I don't know, I was dreaming, or I was asleep, or I was watching. I just felt it was like the most opium-coated film I've ever seen. I was like, in such a great trip. This is like the great experience I had with the movies. And then when I went back to New York, of course, I rented again, watched it diligently, and I could never get that feeling back again. I think Wong Kar-wai has touched me in a dream kind of a level. In other words, he touches us in a subconscious level. I think Wong Kar-wai's film is... how do I put his film? I think he enchanted us with most romantic and beautiful mystic mood. The ambiguity stimulates so much feelings and imaginations, and the characters talk to themselves, even though they're doing that, they're self-centered, but it's so universal. And the 90s Hong Kong specific drifting cut-off, elusive sensation, along with the 60s, particularly before CQC, the innocence of Hong Kong that he recreated as an impression. really creep up into the world's collective consciousness. I think his film is just the ambiguity. I'm not a film critic. So I'm not like you. It's worth to be jealous about. I think he created a mental space for us in which a lot of colors and beautiful scenes and many elements are in there, elements like romance, love stories, relationship, pursuit, and lost, and identity, national history, on and on and on, where everything collide, compensate each other, feeding off each other, and it's so rich and beautiful that everybody can just take whatever they want from it. I wish I could do all those things. So without taking too much of your time, watching his film can be vigorous, can be tiresome, because it's so exhausting. Here's the man who redefined coolness. Wang Gawei, my hero. Can I borrow those sunglasses?
Thank you, Angs, and thank you for coming.
Well, thanks for coming to New York to make a film. We're very excited about seeing it. You've talked a number of times about how important going to see movies was to you when you were young. I mean, I think reading and also seeing movies a lot, I think, with your mom. Could you talk a bit about the types of movies or where you saw films just during that period?
Well, actually, that was like when I was very young, because I was born in Shanghai. I moved to Hong Kong when I was 5. And basically, we don't have any relatives, and we don't speak Cantonese. And my mom's is like film fans. And we live in an area called Chim Sha Choi, which is in those days where people shot... consider this is the world of Suzy Wong. So it is like later on I make a film, The Chungking Express, in Chungking Mansion, because that's the area that I grew up. And in that area there's like cinemas for local production, Shaw's Brothers, Mandarin Film. There's also productions from Taiwan. There's also films showing, like films from mainland China. And of course, there's big cinemas showing American films. And I remember there's also a cinema who shows a European film. And the place actually is owned by the producer, the father of the producer of Ang's film, Crouching Tigers and Hidden Dragons, Mr. Bill Kong. So in those days, my mom's actually is like, wait for me, because we only have like half day school. So I go to school in the morning, and she will wait for me at the end of the around 1 o'clock, and then we would just get something to eat and go into watching movies. So we watch films almost every day. So it is for me is a very very intimate experience, because. Just imagine just from a child who came from China who haven't seen films before. I remember we saw one film the first night we went to Hong Kong. And then it's like very amazing, because you can see films about story, cowboy stories. It's what happened in Shaw's Brothers with all these kung fu actions. So I think that's become a very a major like memories of myself, of my childhood, and at the end of the day, it's so I want to make films, and I want to make films just like an audience. I just want to recollect like the feelings when I sit in a cinema watching this amazing image.
Were there particular films that made a big impression that you remember?
Yeah, I still remember the first night we watched a film, which is not supposed to be seen by kids. It's something like a Chinese remake of like Dial M for Murder. And this is the first time I saw a naked woman in a bathtub being murdered. It's not totally naked, it's only half naked, but it's impressive enough.
Right.
And then later on, I still remember it's like one film really impressed me is like the Thief of Baghdad. Hmm. And because I identify with the kids, so it's trying to get all these like rubies out of these big statues, and it's amazing. And cowboy film is my mom's favorite, and he liked handsome leading men, Errol Flynn and Robert Taylor and so William Holden. So I've seen all these films.
And you've talked also a lot about the importance of reading to you, because you really got into films as a screenwriter before you were directing. But you've talked about reading Russian and French great novels. You had many different literary influences.
Because at that time, my elder brothers and sisters, they stay in China, and because of cultural revolutions, they are not able to join us in Hong Kong. So the only like connections between me and my family or my sisters are through writing letters. I was very young at those days, and there in China, the only like novels they're reading is like those French novels, French literatures or Russian literatures, Balzac and Gorky. So to me, it's we don't teach things like this in Hong Kong, but I want to communicate with them, so I just read all this novel and try to have a conversation with them. So it's amazing because a few months ago I just make a short film and I think I want to make this short film in Russian because I think Russian is a very beautiful language and someday I want to make a film in Russia too.
So how did you sort of make your way into directing? Because the Hong Kong film industry wasn't known for personal films. The films were being cranked out, kind of generic films. And you started writing, you know, you wrote for a number of years before you directed As Tears Go By.
Actually, I was studying graphic design and in Hong Kong Polytechnics. And I don't know why, because actually I have no talents in drawing. But I can take good pictures. So they said, well, you come to be our students. And at that time, this is the beginning of like the so-called Hong Kong New Wave, because we went into like the television's era. At that point, there's a lot of very important directors, like Choi Hak, Patrick Tam, and An Hui. They study cinemas in England or in the America, and they come back to Hong Kong to work in television stations. And it become like a very trendy business. And it's almost like IT business in 10 years ago. And it's like, wow, this is like all the kids want to do it. And so somehow they have a training class to train writers and directors. It's not a film school because they pay you. And the only thing you have to do is to watch films and to be like a film student. I think, well, that's very cool. So I quit being a graphic design student and joined the television stations. And from there, I meet a lot directors and writers, and 1 year later, a lot of people leave because that's, I think, the beginning of like the Hong Kong new wave in the film industry. So they need a lot of new writers and assistant directors. So I become a writer, and then I become a writer for like more than 10 years.
So how did you get the chance to do As Tears Go By? And talk about what you were trying to do. I mean, the reason I showed two different clips was we see action scenes that are typical of many of the Hong Kong films, but also very kind of tender romantic scenes, too. We already see the makings of your style, I think, right away, right off the bat.
The idea of As Tears Go By came from a script which I developed with Patrick Tam, because I was the writer for Patrick Tam, and we developed a project about two gangsters, small-time gangsters. I still remember it's after Better Tomorrow, the film by John Woo. Mm. In those days, and the main finance of Hong Kong films coming from Asian markets. And so after A Better Tomorrow, everybody's trying to make films like A Better Tomorrow. You have to be the figures have to be a heroic gangsters. And our idea is try to do the opposite, is to write a story about two small-time gangsters. The first part is in their teenagers, and then in their 20s, and then in their middle age. But it's very difficult because it is quite opposite to what people expected. So Patrick managed to make the second part, and it's called Final Victory. And then later on, the producer said, well, that's it, and when I have the chance to make a film, so I think, well, I want to do the first part. It's about these two gangsters. And that's As Tears Go By.
Specifically, I have to ask you, since you're in New York, the Scorsese influence. I guess any time you have a fight in a pool hall, it's going to be comparison to Mean Streets. But you have said that that Scorsese was an important influence.
Yeah, yeah. I think what really... inspires about this trilogy is based on Mean Streets. We both love Mean Streets, and in a way, when I look at this image, it's still very close to me because I think that's the first day or the second day of shooting, and basically
the pool hall.
Yes,
fight.
And you know, Patrick is a very detailed director. He's well prepared. He's very meticulous about his shot. So he would stop 2 days before shooting. He said, well, I need to plan all my shots. And he knows exactly what he would do on set. So when I become a director, I think, well, he's my model. I think I can do something like this. But I realize I'm not, because I'm still, the night before shooting, I'm still working on the script because I keep changing it. And I said, well, I wake up in the morning and I have 2 hours, I can do all this shot list. And then I wake up like half an hour before the shoot, so I go to the shoot. It's total panic. And then, because I learned some tricks before as a writer, because as a writer, you have to be on set all the time in Hong Kong. It's because you are the psychiatrist of a director. So you learn some tricks. And so I said, well, this shot is going to be very complicated. I want to see the action, so we are going to make a long track. It's almost as long as here. And so we just follow these two guys jumping around all these tables, so set up the shots. So they will have, because it is going to be a big setup, so it will take at least 3 hours so I can have time. And I still remember, the DP of As Tears Go By actually is Andrew Lau, who later on become a very successful director, who made films like Internal Affairs. Yeah. And I still remember Andrew is, at that point, is very, very young and very energetic. And we are very primitive to shot this shot, because normally if you are following these actions with a dolly, people will have a lot of cushions at the end because the camera will just vroom, hit the wall like this. But we don't have this kind of thing because I didn't tell them the night before. So actually we line up a few other stuntmen over there. So the cameras go like this and then boom. So they would run into all the stuntmen and start over again. But in those days it's really fun. It's because we are all very, very young, and we feel like, well, we're doing something very amazing. Because in those days all these filmmakers are very close. Tomorrow it will become like a legend. Everybody talking about, wow, they did a great shot, a very cool shot yesterday. And that's those were the days in Hong Kong that make films is, we are very close, and it's a new community. You know?
Now, you said that you didn't have talent in graphic design, but in the second clip that we saw from that film, it's very strikingly graphic. I mean, it's a chase scene, but you have the way the bus comes in, the kind of filling the frame with color,
the fade to white at the end. There's a lot going.
I said I don't have talents in drawings, but I can take pictures.
Yeah.
So I
think there's a very strong idea there about playing around and doing something stylistically adventurous.
Well, I think since I was five, I've watched like more than 1,000 pictures. So more or less, they have some influence on me, I think.
Days of Being Wild, which was the next film, was a movie that was very bold in a lot of ways, not just visually, but also the storytelling style. It was a movie that was not a commercial success, to say the least, in Hong Kong. But it got you attention around the world at film festivals, and it really... you got recognition as a significant director. Could you talk about what you were trying to do with that film?
At that point, I was influenced because I like I discover like writers like Manu Peak and Marquise. I'm very impressed by the way they tell the story because I realized like for Chinese, especially. Our educations, we always want to know why or what. What is the story is about? So there's always a theme, there's always an idea, so we have to work according to that. But not very much attention is on how to tell a story. And what I learned from the Latin American literatures is they also have a way to tell the stories. The form and the substance is interrelated. So that's why I want to make a film that, because at the very beginning, Days of Being Wild is supposed to be two-parted. And there will be part one and part two. And part one happened in the 1960s, and part two happened in 1966, involves six characters. And some of them has no relation at all at the very beginning. And it is a very ambitious approach. And it's after As Tears Go By, because As Tears Go By at that point is doing very well. And so the producer gave me this chance to make a film like this. And I still remember, because at that point in Hong Kong, there's mainly people make films as dub film. And I don't think it's right, so I said, well, why don't we just make this film sing sound with and also make it like something that I know, because when I watch films, and I always think, well, sound is a very important element. It cannot be dubbed afterwards. So that's the approach. Because a lot of people expect the film is like, we release the film in Christmas. They think this is a gangster film. It's going to be something like As Tears Go By. But to their surprise, it is not, because it's more about a few young men in the 60s and the relationship between their family, and also it's about memories. So I still remember it has a very strong impact in a lot of markets. Few weeks ago, we were speaking with some Korean audience. I said, well, I still remember the first time when they released Days of Being Wild in Korea. The audience is so angry that they just throw cans to the screens and then just shout and leave. But somehow I think it makes impressions to a lot of people that, well, it is something very different from what most of the Hong Kong production at that time, because it afterwards I think it's get appreciated.
The title of the film was very close to the Cantonese title of Rebel Without a Cause, the Nick Rae film.
Right.
Is that film specifically in your mind when you were making it?
In fact, I'm very lazy with titles. Just imagine, the first film, the title is like a spoil from a Rolling Stone song, As Tears Go By, right? And this one actually is so... It's very hard, because I realize when I first become a director, they always ask you questions, what is your next film?
Right.
And you feel guilty when you have no ideas. And you have to make up some names. So... And I think, well, this is a good title, so we make it like, I still remember this in Cannes, and they asked me, what is your next film? So, this is Being Wild. It seems very good, right?
It does, yeah.
But sometimes we have the title before we have the story.
Now, one thing that you do in Days of Being Wild, which I think you do in a number of your films, including My Blueberry Nights, you are making a film that's about a city, but instead of recreating Hong Kong specifically, you know, in an almost documentary style, you say it's a sort of a memory film. So you create a city that's rooted in a real time, but it's also a city of the imagination.
Not each picture has a different approach. Like Chungking Express, the original idea of this film is it is two-parted. One part is showing the day of Hong Kong, and one part is showing the night of Hong Kong. I want to make a film about where I live and where I grew up and what is very close to me, because Tsim Sha Tsui is very close to me. I know the streets by heart. Every day we shoot at night because we have this Kowloon part at night. So I will wake up at 12 o'clock in the morning noon, and then I will stay in one coffee shop at the Holiday Inn Hotel. And then I will write until 6 o'clock, and then I will walk to the set, and then we start shooting. So my producer actually sit with me and to give all these orders, what kind of props we are going to order. Because I said, well, I know this place so well, and I want to make a film just according to this map. And then Chris, at that point, moved to Hong Kong. He stayed in Central, which
Chris
has
Doyle,
all these,
yeah,
like, elevators. And so we can go to the mid-level of Hong Kong. So I think this is something very new. And so we create another part, the day in Hong Kong side. So that film actually is a Hong Kong that is my impression of the cities, and which is close to me. And for like In the Mood for Love, it's about my memory of my childhood. This is a Hong Kong which has been lost. So it is about an era. Sometimes it's not a film. It's not about the characters themselves. It's about the whole period. You know?
Just to jump to My Blueberry Nights then, because here's the first film that is set in New York. So what was your approach to how you would visualize New York?
First of all, because my wife's family live in New York, so I've been here for a lot of time. So I must say New York is the most the city that I'm familiar most with in the United States. Mm-hmm. And also it reminds me of Hong Kong, because it's even though it's much, much bigger, but I can feel that visually it's also vertical, and also there's a space where people from different parts of the world is living together. And the idea of My Blueberry Nights actually came from a short film I made a few years ago in Hong Kong, which is a story happened in a diner between two persons. And so I think, well, it would be interesting to expand the stories, to adopt the story in this city, because I want to see what the language or the subjects or the space will change the ideas and see where it will bring me to. So we start in New York and we shot in Soho, a small cafe. And at a certain point, you just mix up. It's like, well, this is a cafe in New York, but at the same time, it can be a cafe in anywhere. And then we have the second chapters, seeing Nora Jones trying to run away from New York and start her journey. And we can see like the landscape become changed from vertical into horizontal. And it's also reflect what she feel at the time.
The whole question about style is always discussed with your films. And one thing that was striking to me when I sort of watched through these clips was that there's a sort of emotional through line and emotional intensity that's almost more important than the visual style. You're kind of famous for things like a particular type of slow motion that you use, a particular type of camera work. And you've talked about how that has come about for pragmatic reasons on the set.
Yeah.
So could you just elaborate on that?
Well, I think a lot of people think, well, the film is beautiful, your visual is beautiful, and you must pay a lot of attention on these things. But in fact, it's not true. I have to say, like, after Days of Being Wild, because the film is not doing very well in box office, so it's very difficult to find someone to produce our film, so we start our own company and we produce our own production. So most of the time we are working with a very tight budget. Like Chungking Express, basically we make this film just like the student films. We don't have time to set up like big setup. We just should, just like at that point we call ourselves CNN. We just do it like CNN, just bring the camera and shoot it without permit, without any license. And we even get caught because we shot in the subway without any license. And we have like a warning from the airport because we just break in the airport and shot it. So every day is like planning a robbery. And in fact, some of our style actually came from there. It's like a lot of handhelds, and we shoot with like the step printing. In fact, step printing is not something like very difficult to understand, because when you are shooting with existing light and you don't have a lot of light sources, the only way you have to shoot it with a fast speed of a negative, and then you have to like turn the shutter speeds from 24 frames. Normally, it's 24 frames per second. We just slow it down to 12 frames. That means it allows the exposure longer, and so we can deal with these situations. But later on, we use it organically, and it become our style.
So can you talk about what the process is like? Because Ang kind of talked about it a bit, about like what it must be like to work on a Wong Kar-wai film. Christopher Doyle, who is your insane and brilliant cinematographer of many of your films, said once that your process was... He compared it to a fat man's feet. And he said it gets you where you need to go, but you don't really see the feet until the end of the day. So I don't know. It's an interesting metaphor, but could you talk about what it's like, sort of what that means to you in terms of how you collaborate with your?
I think Ang and me are coming from a very different school. It's because Ang has the way he makes films. It's very different from my way. And basically, it's I presume like in the last few years, Ang has like very good producer working with him, and basically he focused entirely himself as the directors and the writer. So he worked with a certain team and format. And in our productions, basically, because we produce our films . And basically, it's every day is like a war. We have to fight for what we want, and it's not that romantic saying that. Well, we don't have any chance to say, well, I'm not in the mood, and I'm going to stop. It is impossible because we work with the money, which is very limited, and the thing is, we try to do as much as we can. So rolled until the last minute. I still remember when we shot in Happy Together in Argentina, we shot one day in a place called Ushuaia, which is the southeast part of America. And because after that will be like Antarctica, right? And because it's so far away from Buenos Aires, and we shot and shot until we realized with Chris, I said, do we have enough film stock? No, we ran out of film stock. But we still have one scene. Then what we are supposed to do? Then we sit down, and then Chris come up with an idea. So we go to all these photo, those shops to buy film rolls.
Individual rolls.
it is like film rolls, but the film rolls has normally they have 36 frames or 24 frames. So we just rolled it and make this whole scenes in like a still shots. So each shot lasts 1 second. And this is the way to do it. And we have fun because I think at that point we all feel this is an accomplishment. So sometimes people think, well, this is your style. But I always want to explain to students especially. I said, well, it's not only an aesthetic decision. Sometimes it is a practical solution to solve your problems. And one of the jobs of a director is you have to solve problems.
I remember seeing Fallen Angels at the Toronto Film Festival in early September, and I think you were shooting in August.
Mm-hmm.
So you like getting it down to the wire, I guess.
Yeah, My Boo Bear Nights, it can be seen as a love story, but for me, I would say this is a film about letting go. I think for myself or for a lot of people, it's very hard to let go of something, especially when they mean a lot to you. And at a certain point, you have to let go of it. And this is a hard decision. And it's like making films. How can you decide this is the best choice? Can you do better? We can always ask ourselves, can we do better? So I can only do as much as I can. So one of the reasons we always present our film in Cannes, because it become a deadline for us. We have to finish the film at a certain point.
Yeah, and do you think of your films often as sort of one kind of ongoing, evolving, transforming movie? Because you've done, you know, some films that are can be paired with earlier films, and you rework films. I think now you're reworking Ashes of Time.
I think more or less each directors they have certain things that they are like very concerned and which matters a lot to them. And in a way, it's like I don't see each film as an individual. I think it is like a chapters of a long, different chapters of a long book. Even though, like Ang, when I look at his film, even though they are in different genre, it's in Jane Austen periods to the 18th century Chinese swordsmen, or to cowboys, right? But I can see all these connections. I can feel that this is Ang. You can recognize the film directly because I know him. So I know this is the film from Ang. I can see him in this film. So, but he has a different genre, but still I can notice that.
One thing that runs throughout your films is this idea of the fleeting nature of time, and it seems to be tied in with the process of how you work, but always the sense that you can never. That you only live in the present, but you can never really capture it.
No. Actually, I'm not. I think what I'm trying to say is about timing. I think this is a very oriental thinking, because like a lot of there's a Chinese poem is about like the blossom is the same, but the face is different, because it's always about timing. It's like things happen in the right time or the wrong time, but the right persons. But I think this is a very universal theme for dramas, right? It is also a theme for tragedies or comedies. Depends how you put it.
So sort of that life can go in many different directions, but where the place you happen to be at and the time will determine who you wind up with. Yeah. Okay, glad I got that. Could you talk about working with musicians? The performance by Norah Jones is really wonderful in this movie, the new movie. But you've worked with musicians a number of times, you know, as early as Jackie Chung and Place Fly and As Tears Go By and Fei Wong and Leon Lai. Could you talk about what that is like? Is there anything about
What really struck me is like I realized in the United States, people have a very specific idea about like, okay, this is a singer and she's an actress. But in Hong Kong or in our world, maybe in my world, it's like I work with all these great actors, and so happen they are all have music backgrounds. Like late Leslie, he's a great singer, and Tony is also a singer, and Fei Wong is a singer. I don't see them as singer. I just see them as like exceptional personalities. They have are very talented. They have a very, very interesting face, and they have a certain way of express themselves. And of course, as a musician, they start with these backgrounds. They have a very good sense of rhythm. I think for an actor, rhythm is very important because film is about rhythm.
Your films have such a sense of rhythm. They, even though the narratives can be complicated, one thing I love about your narratives is that you don't have a feeling like everything has to be tied together and explained. You know, in Chungking Express, there's a gangster drama in the beginning and then another section that's a cop story. But usually when we see different stories in a film, they all kind of tie together, but you don't work that way?
I have my logic because, like, for Chungking Express, it's my idea is it's a day and night. The structure is very identical. And then I just put it as, like, days and night intertwined like this. Mm-hmm. And, like, Days of Being Wild, it starts with, like, three different storylines. But at the end, they will just meet together. And I just want to show, like, within a certain period of time, it's like you see changes through the unchanged, or vice versa.
Okay, well, let's open it up. We can take some questions from the audience. Could you say anything about Godard?
Godard is God. Godard is a poet, I think. He makes films like a poet do, you know. Amazing.
Okay, right here. The relationship with Christopher Doyle, who shot most of your films, didn't shoot My Blueberry Nights, but it shot most of the other films.
I think I've explained a lot, and you can tell all the times that we've been through together. It's like we've been through some most crazy and most difficult, and we work like nights and days on film. And I just give you an example. I still remember the last day of shooting of Ashes of Time. We was trapped in this desert in the north of China for like 4 months. And finally, that will be the last day. And it's supposed to be the last scene of the film that the characters of Leslie will leave this place and he will set fire and burn the building. And so we set up the camera because we're supposed to shot in 5 o'clock in the morning. And because the light is right. So we have 4 cameras set up. And then we go back to pack our thing. And because we worked there for a long time and the local crew just want to have a farewell party. And then Chris get drunk that night, really drunk. And by 2 o'clock in the morning, my line producer called me up and said, "Big problems. Chris is lying in the bathtub." So I go to his room and he's very drunk. So I drag him and get him in the car. And by the time when we get to the set, it's already 4 something. And so he said, "Well, I can do it. I can do it." But you see, because we have to rehearse, and he's the camera one, which is the key camera, and then he just falls asleep on that. So I asked, I said, "Chris, are you okay?" And he said, "Well, I can manage," because he's very tough, you know. Chris has a very good spirit. I appreciate him for this. And he said, I can do it, but I know he cannot do it, so I just put him in the B camera. And then we set fire, and then we shot that scene. And then during this shot and after this, he wake up. And he feel very, very bad about it. He said, "Well, I'm totally sorry, and I know what shot do you want. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the camera." So he take off his clothes in front of everybody, put some water, and then bring the camera, run into this set with fire. And then he take one shot, which is a very... He know what, because the theme of the film is about an egg. So he just take that shot. And he come back to me, he said, "Well, I'm sorry, but this is what I want to do." And I still keep that picture because everybody's take picture of him, naked Chris with the camera. But but that's a very memorable morning. But and also it tells you a lot about the person that what Chris is about, my partner. He's crazy about making film, and he's a very passionate person.
I just want to ask if you had to adapt at all, making a film in America, just in terms of the sort of union rules or the styles of crews. I don't know if the unions let the cameraman run around naked, but what was it?
I don't see there's a problem with the dress code, right?
Right, right. But what was it? I mean, was there a difference in terms of the working method on this film than your other films?
I don't feel surprisingly, because at first I think it would be very different because they have unions, they have a certain rules, their working hours. But at the end, I don't feel a big difference. Mm-hmm. The only difference is about the lunch break. I remember my producer keep telling me that you have to break for lunch on time, because otherwise we will have penalties, we will have problems.
Okay, right over here. The question is about the selection of music specifically for In the Mood for Love, but it's critical in all of your films.
My mom is responsible for that. and she passed away before that film. And in a way, because my mom has very good taste about music, and Nat King Cole is her favorite. And when we were very young, we always go to restaurants to have a quick lunch, because this is her habit. And in those days, in those restaurants, especially serving Western food, they have music. And because there's a lot of Philippines populations in Hong Kong, so the Spanish music actually is very popular. So in a way, I want to recapture that period. So I use several very popular a Spanish song in a film. And somehow I discovered there's a Spanish version sung by the Nat King Cole. So I used that in the film as a memory of my mom.
Okay, a question about is your sensibility changing?
I think to be a filmmaker, you first of all, you have to be open up. And also, you have to take risks. You might lose something, but you never know until you try it, right?
Okay, down here.
Is it your background as a screenwriter that gives you the confidence to shoot a movie without a script?
Yeah, somehow it helps, because I know, first of all, I think for most of the directors, the dream is to wake up in the morning and have a perfect script there. But it never happened to me. And I think not every screenwriter would like to work with the director who can write script himself. So mostly I have to deal with it. And you know, he will always return call, and you will have problems, he will just run away. To be the writers of Wong Kar-wai is not very encouraging, because people said, even though you work very hard, but they said, well, he worked without a script, so you won't have any credit. But the thing is I believe to be a director, it's very important you have at least the skill or the craft to be able to write the script, because at certain points it gives you a freedom because you won't be restricted, because you know how to make certain change. Because I don't think films can be made just one by one according to the script. Otherwise, we just make a novel. Why don't we just shoot a movie? I think that in the process, there will be a lot of sparks, or there will be accidents, or there will be situations. You have to make certain adjustments and to make it smooth. So I think that's very helpful. And I always give advice to students and young filmmakers. Try to be involved in this process and try to learn the craft to write script.
But you've made big structural changes, like with Chungking Express. Originally, it was going to have more, five stories, I believe.
No, three.
Three, okay.
Yeah.
And you drop one, and I guess in the Days of Being Wild, I think.
But I save it for Fallen Angels.
Fallen Angels, okay.
I would never waste things.
Okay. But wasn't Days of Wild going to be partly set in the 90s? Is that true?
No. Days of Being Wild. Actually, a lot of people ask me about, like, well, are you? Why don't you just make like the sequel, the second part of Days of Being Wild? I think I made it already.
Within the Mood for Love.
In Mood for Love. Yeah. And 2046 basically to me is like the second part of that dream.
Is there a lot of change during the editing process in your films?
Basically, as I described to you, during shooting, we are just like a hungry man, because we don't know if we can go back to this location or not. So we just shoot as much as we could. And during this during this editing process, then we have all these materials lined up to us, and then we select what actually is essential to these stories. Sometimes it's really about editing, it's also about rhythm, because the film can be seen in this way or that way. But you have to find which is the best rhythm for you and for the audience.
Okay, over here. Question about some of your performances.
This is also one of the reasons I don't want to work with a very precise or detailed script at the very beginning, because normally the normal process, although what the film school told you, is have a script first, and then you have the characters, you have the role, and try to find someone to play that role. And I don't like that. I prefer to customate my role for the characters, for the actors, because I have that person's in my mind, and I have the vague idea about this girl, and then I know there will be Zhang Ziyi playing it, and then I will make certain changes of these characters based on my observations of this actress and actors, just like my Blueberry Nights. I have this story, I shot this story like years ago, but once I think, well, I want to work with Nora, I think this is the right project for him, for her, and I would create Elizabeth with her face in my mind, and I just do all this like development based on that.
Could you say a bit more, I mean, about specifically how you direct? A lot of times you really seem to be capturing very private internal feelings. So there's a lot of that, I think, in Nora Jones' performance. And I don't know if you could just talk about the...
No, I think the reason you want to work with this actress or you are attracted to this person is because there's certain personalities and there's certain qualities that attracts you. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that for an actress is it inspires imaginations. The face you can imagine a story with this face and with this look. So then you can create a character out of that. And I have no interest to like to create an idea and then to ask someone to fit in this. It is not my method.
Specifically, why did you choose to do a film, My Blueberry Nights, at this time, a film in the United States? And then was there any difference in the directing process?
It happened like 3 years ago when I have a chance to have a meeting with Nora in New York. And both we were intrigued to make a film together. And obviously, I cannot ask Nora to speak in Chinese or in Cantonese. And at that point, she's also working on her album. So I think the most logical way is to make a film in English and in this country. And at first, it is something. It seems very wild for me because it is not my language. But I also think, well, but it can be a very interesting experience. It gives me a chance to do something which is very different from my previous film. Try to express myself in a different context, in different language, and also it is a very good opportunity for me to work with a bunch of talented artists in this country. Why not? So I decided to make this film here.
Well, the question was, how do you able to keep your style so fresh?
So this is one of the reasons I want to make my Blueberry Nights at this point, because normally people, after 5 years of working on certain things, they would need a vacation. And so I just make a film, which is very different. And to me, like My Boo Bear and I is a refreshment, to refresh myself from the experience of 2046.
I think there's a myth that you don't have a script at all.
Maybe. No, but, no. I think sometimes people will think things very drastically. It's like, well, when you're working without script, that means there's no paper, there's no words, and you just walk on the set and just tell them that you do this and you do that. No. What I mean about you work without a script is you don't have something called a script, which is like definite. You have to do it like this. We still have pages, and we still have scenes. We still have script. Send it to the cast before shooting, especially for My Boo Bear and I, because it is in English, so I need to work with Larry Block. And because Larry is a very active marathon runner, so I have to make sure he finished the script before we start shooting, because we were on the road for 7 weeks, and otherwise I have to deal it with myself. So, but even though we have a script, but during these 7 weeks, we make a lot of changes, and then we make a lot of adjustments, because first of all, it is a very intense shoot, and there's so many things we have to solve. And also, when I see my cast in front of the cameras when they deliver this line, sometimes I think lines is important, but what's more important is between lines. How to deliver a line, how to control the pause is very, 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 very important. And especially in this film, because English is not my language. I can understand the words, but I'm not so sure that about the subtext and the way to deliver it. So I have to ask my cast to be involved in this process, because I'm sure they understand the behavior more than me. And so we make adjustment. I still remember when there's a scene in Memphis that night. It's a long scene with Rachel Weisz and Nora Jones talking about the story between the Rachel and her husband. And she has to leave next morning. And so it's very late. We shot like 15 hours. But that's a very important scene. And somehow, it's like her monologue. But somehow we feel the line is not strong enough, because at that point, the emotions and everything. So we just sit down together, and we just co-write the line again. She writes certain part, and I write certain part, and we put it together. And I think this is a very organic way to make a film. And I'm not sure this is a normal practice in the United States, or is a normal practice in a Hollywood system. But to me, this is the most satisfying process. And because that characters become so real and so close. The first things I noticed when I came to America is like, I realized like Americans like sweets. Even the Coca-Cola here is sweeter than the one in Hong Kong. But it is not the intention. I think we have seen films about Chinese made by foreigners. Sometimes it looks quite weird to us. I just don't want to repeat this kind of mistake, so I just want to make sure that it is authentic. That's why I need to work with Larry Block, and also to involve my crew and my cast during this process. But in a way, it's not the way we end the film is not basically decided by me. I must say, it's like we shot the first three chapters in the summer, and then we shot the last chapters in the winter for 1 week in New York. So after the first three chapters, and we stopped, at that point we don't have the ending is still open. It's because either there will be a reunion or there will be a disappointment. Because, but I don't want to get into details, I was told. So I cut the film during the process and during the break. And at the end, it's the characters of Jeremy and Elizabeth convinced me the ending that we have now is the most sensible and logical. And this is how it works, because sometimes you have to be honest and you have to follow the characters. I read a novel last year in China, a Chinese novel, very interesting. It's about the writers always visited by the characters he creates, because they complain it's not well written. We want our life this way. We don't want to be this miserable. And so he has to change it. I think it works a certain way, because when you are involved in the projects, you create all these characters. At a certain point, these characters will lead you, because they become something very solid. And you cannot just do it by, like, I want it this way, I want it this way. Because at a certain point, this is the direction, so you have to go that way.
And don't worry, there's plenty of heartbreak, too, in my Blueberry Night. So, okay, well, I know you're going back to work on the mix of Ashes of Time tomorrow, I think. So I really want to thank you for being here tonight, and good luck with the movie.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.